Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Well, hello out there on this Thursday, at least when we are talking and recording, whenever you're listening. If you're not listening live, I hope you are well in the midst of this world crisis, this world phenomenon. Nothing has been seen like this before. We are a world at war, and every nation seems to be involved, and it's an invisible enemy. But we have an invisible God who can fight on our behalf, and we are trusting Him. And we have a great show in store for you today. My friend Dr. Bongi Wanyika is going to join us in a few minutes, calling in from her home in Kansas. We've got a lot to talk about. Dr. Wanyika is the author of a very interesting book. It was fascinating to work on it, and as it is with all the projects that Urban Press has been involved with, where we have a chance to read, sometimes listen to people's stories, and they're all fascinating, they're all interesting, and to see how God has woven a tapestry of in each life, and sometimes that is made up of threads of pain, threads of confusion, but also threads of joy and hope. And so we're going to talk to Dr. Wanyika. I have been in touch today with people from other nations that are certainly watching the United States, but watching their own situation as well. I heard from one of our partners in Kenya. He said, "I wish to let you know the situation is not changing here, and cases now hitting 81. Yesterday it was at 55. We feel we might be indoors for some time, but we are composed. As a church, we have modernized our services to social media, and it's becoming the new model of ministry. It's my feel that even after COVID-19, we shall purchase more equipment to support our social platform presence. Once more, thanks for standing with us." I did a Facebook Live that one of our partners, when I woke up this morning, I saw his comment that it was so good to watch it and felt like it was good information for them in Kenya at this time. So if you're a newbie to any of my media in these days, you will not be aware that I am starting every one of my broadcasts or shows or Facebook Lives or whatever I'm doing with a reading of Psalm 91. Psalm 91 is the classic psalm that addresses our stance in times of trouble and God's ability to protect us. And I have been working my way through various translations, and some people don't like the idea of various translations. I do. I think there are insights that the translators can give us that can benefit our reading. And so none of the translations are word for word, because it's almost impossible to do when you're taking a translation out of a language that is a couple thousand years old and has changed during that time as far as words and nuances and meanings. And so we're always making our best efforts to interpret God's word, but I always take comfort in the same spirit that inspired the word is the same spirit that is protecting the word and bringing it to us in this day. So today's version is one that, gosh, this was my second Bible that I owned. It's called the Amplified Bible, the classic edition. And it's amplified because it does do some commentary as it translates, by adding some words that the translators felt were important for the reader to grasp the full meaning of the words and the verses. So it takes a little longer to read, but it's always something that I've at least taken a look at and occasionally will quote in some of my writings or some of my teachings. But here we go, Psalm 91 from the Amplified Bible. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall remain stable and fixed under the shadow of the Almighty, whose power no foe can withstand. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. On Him I lean and rely, and in Him I confidently trust. For then He will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. Then He will cover you with His pinions, and under His wings shall you trust and find refuge. His truth and His faithfulness are a shield and a buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror of the night, nor of the arrow, the evil plots and slanders of the wicked that flies by day, nor of the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor of the destruction and sudden death that surprise and lay waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only a spectator shall you be, yourself inaccessible in the secret place of the Most High, as you witness the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord your refuge, and the Most High your dwelling place, there shall no evil befall you, nor any plague or calamity come near your tent. For he will give His angels a special charge over you to accompany and defend and preserve you in all your ways of obedience and service. They shall bear you up on their hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and adder, the young lion and the serpent shall you trample underfoot. Because He has set His love upon me, therefore will I deliver Him. I will set Him on high because He knows and understands my name, has a personal knowledge of my mercy, love, and kindness, trusts and relies on me, knowing I will never forsake Him. No, He shall call upon me and I will answer Him. I will be with Him in trouble. I will deliver Him and honor Him. With long life will I satisfy Him and show Him my salvation. So there we have the Amplified Bible version of Psalm 91, and these are promises that we are learning to live in during these uncertain times. And, you know, my eyes are fixed on Him. My life has been in His hands for 47 years. If the Lord chooses to take it now or chooses to leave me here another 20 years, it's none of my business. My business is to be making the most of today, to be productive and faithful to the purpose for that day and to my own life purpose. And so I want to bring on our guest today, Dr. Bongiwen Yika, who has been a pursuer of purpose and coming into new understandings of who she is. Dr. Bongi, welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice. Tell me, you are down in Ottawa, Kansas, and give us the Kansas. You're our on-the-ground reporter in Kansas. Tell us what the mentality is, what's going on, and what your view is of what's taking place right now.
Well, it's a unique experience for our community. We live in a community of give or take 12,000 people,
mm-hmm.
and we're
mm-hmm.
scattered around Ottawa, Kansas. It's a university community, and it has been an adjustment not only for our university community, because our faculty and staff are educating students from home, and students
mm-hmm.
who left for spring break, thinking they were going to come back to campus to finish off the school year, have had to start distance learning and getting educated from home. That has brought some disappointments because senior students cannot come back to graduate, and that goes for school as well. So everyone here is taking what's happening very seriously and Our county has a stay-at-home order. Our governor issued a stay-at-home order, and everybody is trying to do their best to stay home and, as we've been told, flatten the curve. But we do have people that have been infected and people that are in the hospital, and the cases continue to inch up slowly.
Yeah, and it's the same here, and we in Pittsburgh are quite a hospital community, so there are a lot of healthcare workers and lots of the University of Pittsburgh today, I see, came up with what they believe is a vaccine, and they've asked the FDA to fast-track it, and so this is a big research area, too. But, of course, we, like you, are just, we're under house arrest, it's been, fortunately, I like the person I'm under house arrest with, or it would be, a more difficult time, but making the most of the time. Now, you are from the nation of Zimbabwe. And we may talk a little bit about your story of how you got here, but are you hearing anything from home? Have you talked to family or friends? What are you hearing about the situation in Zimbabwe?
We've been texting back and forth. We started updating them from here when we got the stay-at-home order, and the Zimbabwe government has really not announced a tangible plan. But when South Africa decided to notify its citizens that they were going to do a stay-at-home order for 30 days, that put pressure on the nations in Southern Africa, because it became apparent to them that this wasn't only a problem here in the United States and in Asia, but it was a worldwide problem. So Zimbabwe started their stay-at-home. It sounds like it was staggered this past Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday, definitely. And family is indoors. It's hard because you know how in our culture we love to socialize, whether it's with our neighbors, with our community, or even within families. And it's a bit difficult. And as of this afternoon, in my hometown of Bulawayo, the police have started arresting individuals that are loitering because they are they keep reinforcing the importance of people staying home, and some people are not staying home. And to some extent, I understand why, because with our economy, some people have to venture out to find food and other daily necessities that they cannot afford to buy in bulk.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even have a place to store it. It's just not quite the same mentality. And, of course, the conditions before this were very difficult in Zimbabwe, weren't they?
Oh, yes, they were. They were. The economy, the formal economy, which would be someone goes and gets a job, is very minimal. So most people in Zimbabwe have to self-employ. And that self-employment is not what I would call regular. Only if you have the money to invest can you have a business, because there are many needs that people require, from businesses to individuals in homes. But you have to have the financial capital to be able to start that business.
Yeah, so it was a tense situation before this worldwide crisis hit, and we're just watching and praying and hoping that people can isolate, and that we can not see happening there what we're seeing happen here in the United States with an explosion of cases. Let's talk a little bit. Tell our listeners some of your story of how you got to the United States and what it was like when you first got here. Let's go back and give our people some perspective before we get into your book.
Well, my husband and I came to the United States. Then we had our daughter, who was 2.5, in 2000. We came initially to visit, to scout the land per se, 1999, and our contact, funny enough, here in the U.S. was you. So we came and visited Pittsburgh, my husband was going to go to a seminary in Pittsburgh, but that didn't work out. It didn't seem like that's where God wanted us to be. So we went back in 1999 and continued to pray and see where God would want us to go, because when we initially met, both of us we knew for a fact that both of us wanted to continue with our education, and we wanted to come and do that here in the United States. So we knew both of us wanted to come to the United States, but we wanted to be sure that it was the right place for us to be because we had a child. So we ended up coming to the United States May the 30th in 2000, 9 pieces of luggage, and I think we had $1,200 cash, and that was us believing God, this is where we're supposed to be, and believing God, this is where we're going to further our education.
And you soon, that cash dwindled quickly, didn't it?
Oh, yes, it did, because we ended up to Oral Roberts University, which is where my husband went to do his master's and then got his doctorate. And we went for that apartment because it didn't require us having a car, either to get to church or for my husband to attend his classes. But what we didn't realize and what we didn't know was that electricity, you need a deposit, because we didn't have a credit history. Our apartment complex needed a deposit because we didn't have a credit history. And anything that we had to connect to the apartment, we had to pay up front. So at the end of us finishing that process, we really didn't have any money or anything beyond our clothes that we had brought, 3 suitcases each, which equal to 9 bags.
Yeah, and I think if I remember your story, the apartment didn't even have light bulbs. You had to buy light bulbs. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. The only 2 places that had light bulbs was the kitchen and the bathroom. So the first night, we moved in during the summer. So the sun sets pretty late here in the U.S. in the summer, especially in the Midwest in Oklahoma. So we're sitting in the living room, and, of course, the sun is still shining, so everything is light and bright. And then when the sun starts setting, we say to our daughter, okay, go switch on the light. And then our daughter says, there is no light fixture. And we're like, okay, what does he mean? That's when we both realized that we needed to go get the light that you plug into the wall, and then you have light. But only the kitchen and the bathroom had fixtures that came with the apartment.
Yeah. So it was tough.
It was tough, but with the gift of hindsight, you realize that God was faithful right through that season of our lives. And we believe his faithfulness was because we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is what and where he wanted us to be.
And having
that sense of calm, because we knew that, helped us deal with some of those challenges.
Yeah. And then while you were here, or after you got here, you had a second child. Is that correct?
Yes, in 2002.
And so now you had a daughter and you had a son, and at some point you went back to school. Is that correct?
Yes, I actually did a semester at Oral Roberts when I was pregnant with our son, and then the program wasn't a good fit for me, so we then decided while we wait on a program that would better fit what I wanted to study and the calendar time that would fit our family, I stayed home until our son was a year, And then in 2003, I then started a program where I could finish my undergrad in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
was
you did that
on my journalism.
Yeah. So, but then you didn't stop there, did you?
No, I did not. I graduated with my bachelor's, and that fall I started my master's at University of Oklahoma. Boomer Sooner.
You had to throw that in there. And And then so you got your master's, and keep telling us.
And then right after getting my master's, I then applied to the University of Oklahoma into their PhD program. It was a new program at our campus at University of Oklahoma, Tulsa, which was doing interdisciplinary. So you could choose your area of study and the discipline that you wanted to study. And I was very passionate about not only social justice issues, but nonprofits. So my study was on nonprofit leadership, looking specifically at board leadership and board diversity. And my disciplines were education, social work, and human relations. So I got my PhD in interdisciplinary studies in 2008.
Yeah. And, you know, we're telling a very linear story here as we're talking to our guest today, Dr. Bongi Winyika, down in Ottawa, Kansas, author of My Name Is Not Sibongile, One Woman's Search for Identity. You know, it sounds okay. You come over, you have children, you go to school. But this wasn't that kind of journey, was it? You were on a different journey, a journey that I think is described by the subtitle of your book, Searching, A One-Woman Search for Identity. Talk to us about that byline and how it overlays, how it fits into this journey to coming to the States, going to school that you've just told us about.
Well, it's interesting because I always knew and felt I didn't belong. And in some instances, my husband, for example, has a pastoral background. I met him when he was just leaving his job as a medical sales executive and going into the ministry full time. And one of the things that we both talked about and agreed on when we started dating was he knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that ministry would always be part of his life.
Uh-huh.
And for him, dating me and later getting married, he wanted me to know for myself that ministry would be part of my life. He said to me, I don't want you to wake up one day and think to yourself, oh my goodness, what did I get myself into? Because he said, we won't get rich with ministry, but we'll live a fulfilled life. So I knew that ministry would always be part of my life, but I didn't have my own identity as Bongi of what that meant for me personally. And I remember when you came to Zimbabwe in the early 90s and you're talking about purpose, I thought I knew my purpose then. And when I started unpacking and working on this book, some of the presuppositions that I had when I got married, when we got to the United States, as I was going through my education, some of those were challenged. And God used the process of me working through the book to reveal what those presuppositions and what my identity was and what that meant for me as an individual. I'll never forget when we were talking about me sitting and writing this book, and we're in that coffee shop in Oklahoma City, and you asked me, what do you think your purpose is? And I said, well, my purpose is being a mother. And you turned and you looked at me straight in the eye and you said, that's not a purpose, that's a function. And I remember thinking, should Dr. J be saying that straight? Because that took me off. That was where my foundation and identity was. Of course, I knew my calling is when I got saved, I will always serve the Lord, and I'm serving the Lord. But beyond my relationship with the Lord, beyond my being married to Regis, the next thing was being a mom. But as we started talking and we started unpacking some of those things, I was like, no, Dr. J, things seem to be in place. Why are you shuffling everything? Because it was not only challenging physically and mentally, but it was also challenging emotionally. Because I remember one of the stories that I tell in the book, when I started the process, I never intended to share that story. And as I was working and writing, it became very apparent that I cannot tell my life story and my testimony and live out one of the defining experiences and regrets of my life. And I remember sitting down and writing that chapter and emailing it to you with the disclaimer that I've never shared this with anybody else except my husband when we got married. And I'm sending it to you because this is also a part of my story.
Yeah, and I remember getting it, and it was powerful. You know, I heard somebody say one time, the testimony we should give is the one that we don't want to give, you know. I mean, it's the one, oh, gosh, what are people going to think? But it was, you know, I remember the honesty with which you approached your purpose quest and your openness and the questions that you asked. And I do remember that coffee shop discussion, and I remember our times on the phone and when I would, you know, come to work first in Oklahoma and then in Kansas. It was a very special. It was sacred to watch this unveiling, or the veil coming off your eyes and your understanding being clarified, that God had something for you to do that only you could do. And let me just clarify for our listeners. I mean, I honor motherhood, I honor parenthood, but when I say it's a function, you have purpose before you give birth. You have purpose after your kids leave. You're always a mother, you're a grandmother, or what, you know, whatever, a grandfather, but that changes, but your purpose remains the same, and purpose is seldom defined in the context of somebody else. I'm this person's spouse, or I'm this person's parent, and so that's why I was pressing you to go a little deeper. Now, you know, your search for identity, the title for your book is My Name is Not Sibongile, and that's an unusual title. Talk to us about where that came from and how that played into your quest for identity and purpose.
So when we filed our immigration paperwork for applying for citizenship, one of the documents that has to be handed in to immigration services is your birth certificate. So when we're putting the paperwork together, I knew when I was in high school that I had changed my first name because my original birth certificate had me as Sibongile Ndlovu, which is my mom's last name. So when I was in high school, I changed that name to Sibongile Nkosi, which was my given name. What happened was when my mom got pregnant with me, she delivered and left me with my grandmother. And because a male was needed to go and apply for the birth certificate, my uncle went and applied for my birth certificate. And from what they say, they told the clerk Sibongile Nkosi, and the clerk wrote Sibongile. And because the person who's present in most cases, it's the mother and father. In my case, it was my uncle, my mother's elder brother, and his wife. So on my birth certificate, I don't have my mom as my mom. I have my late aunt and my late uncle as my mother and father. So In high school, I changed back to Sibonginkosi. And then later, I changed back to my grandfather's original last name from Malawi, which was Chigaru. So looking back at, I don't think many people have to change their first name, their last name, before they get married. Most people will change their last name when they get married. For me, I had those two changes, which in the context of my life, when you read the book, it makes sense why I ended up where I was and needed to do the work that I had to do to find my identity, my authentic identity.
Yeah, and I don't want to reveal too much, but your aunt and uncle had they went and filed for your birth certificate, and to this day, you've never met your father, have you?
No, I have not.
Mm-hmm.
Have no idea whatsoever.
Hmm. What's that like? What's that been like for you?
It's interesting because the assumption among family has always been that every child wants to know who their father is or make some connection. And we have had individuals in our family that were born in similar situations like I was, and they did connect with their parents, whether it's a mother or a father. But in my case, as the book details in detail, I, to be honest, never had the wish or thought that was a possibility or could even happen. That never became an equation in my life. Of course, as you get older and you start thinking of living here in the U.S., you start thinking of genetics, what is medical history and all those things. It crosses your mind as you get older and you're maybe diagnosed with this ailment or that ailment. But beyond that, I have never had a desire. And part of me, I think, as the book details, being a girl and then a young woman who grows up with a father, you have to work through the resentment of someone or feeling someone didn't want you. And maybe you end up feeling, why should I even wonder who they are if they did not care enough to come and claim me, per se?
Yeah. And you do a very good job. I mean, in the book, you don't trash, you know, the whoever your father is. I detected no bitterness, no anger, but there was a search. That was part of, you know, I think, who am I, you know, and it has caused you to drill down deep into your own heart and your own history and into the Lord. And you tell also the story in the book that your second child has presented some special opportunities for you and your family, hasn't he?
Oh my goodness. Our life, we don't know what our life would be without him. Because he came in style, 2 weeks overdue. Had to be brought into the world through prayer, and raising him from day one has required prayer and, as we say here in America, a strong backbone. Because he's on the autism spectrum, and interesting enough, today is World Autism Awareness Day. And,
oh, really?
Yes, it is. And he has intellectual disabilities and other medical challenges. So it's been an interesting 17 years being with Kudzai, and also being mindful that his sister is 5 years older. So trying to figure out as both my husband and I as parents how to navigate that has been interesting, challenging, and definitely needed lots of prayer.
Yeah. Now, you've been writing some things and sending them to me out of this season and time in your life. Talk to us about that and what you're writing and why, and maybe, you know, if you feel comfortable giving us a little window into your days during this season.
Well, it became very apparent. His school closed for spring break. The week before, things really became apparent that this virus was going to cause problems for not only a certain part of our country, but the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
So usually, just to give you a glimpse of what happens with when you're a parent and you have a special needs child, and of course, I can't speak for all special needs parents, because the needs of the children are unique based on what their diagnosis is. But in our case, because I've been on the spectrum, it's important to maintain routine, and going to school is a great routine for him. And when he arrives at school, the teachers and the teacher's assistants already have his day planned out. So he knows what to expect from the minute he leaves home, goes to school, and then when he gets home, we have certain activities that we do at home, which are the same every day. If it's going to be different, he needs time to process that change because that's just the way he is. So when he was home for spring break, we would have never known that would be the last time when he left to come home for spring break that he would go back to school this school year. Because spring break, that's when the school, the specialized school that he goes to 30 minutes away from us, closed because of the virus. And our home school district also closed because of the virus. And like I mentioned earlier, the university and then businesses started following. So we went from him being used to the school schedule to now trying to figure out, okay, now he is going to be home and it's indefinite. And how do we explain why he isn't going to school? And how do we explain that in terms and ways that he can understand? So I have found that writing is very cathartic for me. Being able to express how I'm feeling or whatever challenges we're going through helps a lot. So I remember one morning when I listened to you on Facebook Live, you were talking about it's important for us to not only talk about what is happening around us in terms of all the negative things that this virus has caused, but also to refocus and think, what is God saying to us about the way things were and how things will be after all this is done? Because surely we can't go through this and go back to the way things were. So that morning I started thinking, I thought, you know, this is now a pandemic. I'm home, parenting, a special needs child. Why don't I start writing posts on Facebook and title them Pandemic Parenting and just share my experience and what I'm going through? And that's what I started doing last week. And it's been helpful in processing the day-to-day, because we try and keep the days more or less similar. But, for example, one of the things that helps him when he gets too much energy going, especially late mornings are pretty okay, but late afternoons, when medications start to dissipate before the evening dose has to be given, taking him out in the car and taking him for a ride in the car helps calm him down, because the motion, he's extra sensory seeking, so the motion of the car helps him a lot. But because that is not essential to our community here in an essential activity, we can't do that anymore. So we went through a couple of days where it was hard for him to understand, okay, when I start feeling this way, this is what we usually do. Why can't we do it? And my husband was going to work, so trying to explain, okay, Dad can drive his car and go to work, but Mom and I, there's a reason why we can't get into Mom's car and drive around until I feel better. So working through those type of daily activities that probably most people will take for granted is and has been challenging.
Yeah. Have you gotten any feedback on what you're writing?
I have. I wrote, the last one I wrote and posted was on Tuesday night.
Right.
About when I read somewhere that this is so open-ended that we could be going towards March. I mean, sorry, May or
May.
June. I remember thinking, oh my goodness. And as soon as I read that, my whole focus started focusing on, Lord, can I really do this until that long? And that that usually sends me into a spiral. And then, if this happens, what could happen here? If this happens, what if they cancel his summer school in June? So then we're home until August. What do we do during this whole time? All those things started piling up. So I reached out to you, and I reached out to a friend of mine who is local. And I explained that in the post that you help, because usually you send me something funny and I laugh. And, of course, laughter is medicine, so that usually helps. And then my friend, out of nowhere, texted me and said, I'm bringing you dinner and you can't say no. So she made us dinner and came and dropped it off. So just sharing that and letting those that read that know that you can reach out to a friend. And that night, two friends actually reached out to me. One is a Philippa from Oklahoma, who I haven't seen since May. And then another friend I haven't seen in years, who lives in Florida, Lisa. And both of them reached out to me and said, anytime you need to talk to anybody, day or night, just call us.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dr. Bongi Winyika, the author of My Name Is Not Sibongile, One Woman's Fight for Identity. She, in the book, talks about some family issues and challenges and joys and sorrows, and one of them is their son who is on the autism spectrum, and she's just been telling us what it's like to be home during these times of he was so loving school and his bus ride of about 30 minutes, and now all that's cut off, and now he's struggling to make sense of the world, as we all are, and his parents are struggling to explain that world to him. And from what I can see, they're doing a great job. Let me switch gears a little bit. You, I think, recently wrote some proposals. Talk to us about what that involves, what you're seeing emerge in your life as an emphasis and something you would like to do some training and teaching in.
Well, I got in contact with the Kansas Volunteer Commission, which is under the Department of Education, Kansas Department of Education, and she knew that my expertise and study had been diversity, inclusion, and equity. And her department needed somebody to do not only in-person training, but it also evolved into hosting webinars on diversity, inclusion, and equity. And their main focus is volunteers that work with organizations, community organizations in the state of Kansas. So I wrote a proposal to do the in-person trainings, which will average maybe 30, 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that proposal was approved. So we're scheduled to start training in May. We're going to do one in May. We're going to do one in June and one in July. And just this past week, I completed another proposal to write a curriculum for them on diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as we're going to tie that curriculum with the webinars. So we are going to, those that cannot attend the in-person training will be able to get the training through webinars. It's been exciting because it's a subject that I love and can talk about endlessly, as you know. And I'm excited to be able to use the gift that God has given me to help our community here in Kansas and do that training.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you're going to do a great job. Do you see this? Is this in your area of purpose? Is this the conclusion that you're coming to, that this is an emphasis and a work that you need to do that's part of who you are?
Oh, my goodness. Is it? Because I, through this process, I don't, listeners, this won't happen to all of you, but I actually got the light bulb moment about my purpose on a cruise to Alaska with Purpose Quest. And my purpose is to secure grace and dignity. So what better way to do that than have the experience of being a special needs mom? What better way to do that than being a black woman in America who is not African-American? What better way to do that than someone who studied and loved human relations and diversity? And what better way to do that than fulfill the purpose that you believe God has called you to do? Because when we're talking about service organizations in Kansas, we're talking about individuals that could be coming from low-income households, individuals that could be coming from very diverse organizations, individuals that can come from the majority, what we term the majority population here in America, individuals that could come from different races. So it's people who are working in our communities providing services to people that have to get them from those organizations. So I believe my work with the Kansas Volunteer Commission will help not only challenge individuals in their view of diversity, equity, and inclusion, but also change their organizations to better serve our community as a whole. And how do you do that at best? You secure grace and dignity. You see everybody as, in my viewpoint, a child of God.
Yeah. And I've often said your purpose is defined by what is the opposite of who you are. So my purpose is order out of chaos. I love order, but God always sends me to chaos. If yours is grace and dignity, he's going to send you to people who don't sense dignity or dignity hasn't been bestowed on them by the culture, and they maybe haven't experienced grace of inclusion, grace of being listened to. So, you know, that's where the pain of purpose comes in, because the very thing you love and would want is missing in the place that you're sent, because that's what you are to give. That's what you are to bring. And if that makes sense. And so you're right. Who better to do it than someone with your background and your experience?
Oh, yes. And it's, you would think that getting to the knowing and realizing what my purpose is and it being revealed is a straight line. But I learned pretty quickly that it is not a straight line. And when it isn't a straight line and it's not easy, that's, I needed to work through what I needed to work through to get here, and I'm still learning on what that means for me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a continuing process. And to be honest with you, it's not always fun, because you have to realize certain ways that you're used to doing things, those are interrupted, because God starts revealing certain things you need to work on for Him to show you what the next step is. And that's not always fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been talking to Dr. Bongi Wanyika, the author of My Name Is Not Tsibongile, One Woman's Fight for Identity, which is available on Amazon.com in both Kindle and paper versions. And it's a fascinating, well-written story of Dr. Bongi's search for identity and meaning. We've got just a couple of minutes left. We're talking about collaborating on a book. Tell our listeners about what we're thinking about doing.
Well, one thing that we have in common is you love cracking jokes and I love to laugh. So you've lived in Zimbabwe and you've visited many countries around the world. And I've lived in America and, of course, was born and raised in Zimbabwe. So we thought, how fun would it be for us to write a book on things that you find either interesting, peculiar, or funny that you have experienced or seen in Zimbabwe? And then I can write from my perspective of having come here and seeing how things are done here and what I think, what I find peculiar and hilarious about some of the things that we do here in the U.S.
Yeah. And of course, you're a big sports fan, so you're going to write about some of that. And quickly, tell everybody about Christmas in the United States.
Oh my goodness, Christmas! My first Christmas in the United States, December of 2000. I was a student at Oral Roberts University, and it seemed as if every beginning of every class that I went to, the chit-chat was about Christmas, the focus was about Christmas, and I'm not talking about Christmas as in, praise the Lord, Christmas is the day that Jesus was born. It was about, what am I going to buy, what's on the Christmas list, when am I going to pick up the tree, do you know where I can get a good tree, have you seen these ornaments? And coming from being raised in Zimbabwe, Christmas in Zimbabwe for us was, I get a new outfit, we see our cousins, we're going to have a nice meal, and that's it. Coming here, I got overwhelmed because it felt to me as if it was all about stuff. And being the wife of a full-time student at the time and having our child, we didn't have the extra income to even start thinking about, okay, so what is on her Christmas list? Because we didn't have a list. So from the beginning, Christmas became very difficult. It became a very difficult time for me because it's overwhelming. Starting in maybe end of October into November, you start seeing all these commercials on TV. It's all about Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from outside is very overwhelming. I still haven't gotten used to it. And I've been here now going on 20 years.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot.
Well, this year we may not have much. I mean, I think this the impact of what's going on here is going to last for a while. But and that is so fascinating because it's something. I mean, we were raised with, and every year it seems like the ads start earlier and it's more commercial. And I think this whole season of the pandemic is God causing us to pause. It's like God has hit the pause button and He's going to hit the reboot. And everything we've done that we just considered normal and part of our culture, we're going to have to step back and evaluate. And I think someone like you, who's, you know, who's a citizen, who lives here, but, you know, isn't enamored with everything that goes on, really can have a voice to help us see some of the things that just we took for granted or just were part of the furniture, part of who we are, and all that is being called into question. Well, Dr. Bongi, thank you. The time goes quickly, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Yeah, and
thank,
so you did a great job.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for and yesterday my guest, the spouse, had a birthday, and you have the same thing, don't you?
Yes, my husband turned 50 today.
Wow, and I met him when he was 24, and
I know.
We, that was 1995, and so we were both young then, and he's still young. But me, I'm well into Well, listen, I look forward to getting down to Kansas first chance I have. You know, when the planes start flying, I'll be there. You wish your husband, from all of us, all our listeners, a very happy birthday. And again, thank you for your time. God bless you and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. God bless you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Dr. Bongi Wanyika, again, her book, My Name is Not Sibongile, S-I-B-O-N-G-I-L-E. Just put in Bongi, B-O-N-G-I, that's and Wanyika, W-E-N-Y-I-K-A. Put it in Amazon and check it out. And her book is, we've had more downloads on Kindle, and I think it's people in Zimbabwe and South Africa who have done it than any other book we have in Urban Press. And I'm so delighted for that. And it's a project that I would highly recommend to you. It's interesting reading. She touched on, just alluded to some of the stories that she gets, goes much more deeply in the book. Well, tomorrow we're going to have Howard Slaughter, who wrote the book Addicted to Debt, and we're going to talk about finances and debt and student loans and cars and mortgages. And but don't worry, he's not a legalist. He's so practical and so encouraging, and he's been a big help in my own thinking as we sat and worked through the book. That I just wanted the first week that we were back on the air to have him talk to us, and so that'll be tomorrow. Then I think I'm going to take Saturday off, and then I'm going to look for a guest on Sunday evening when the day I will not do a Facebook Live. And so anyway, be watching my Facebook page or write me, and as we close, you'll hear how you can get in touch with me if you have any questions, recommendations for shows, or any other ideas or thoughts that you have. This is John Stanko, your host for Wake Up to Purpose. We'll be back again tomorrow at this time. Until then, you be about the work of purpose in your life. So long. God bless.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.